shame the message, I wreck it, but keep it precious. Classy, never dress trash, they still harass me. Dudes act funny like they wanna laugh and gas me. I step on the gas though, nothing gets past me or through me, confusing me for a groupie. Excuse me, but just how stupid could you be?
Welcome, welcome, everybody. Welcome. I am Sharon Smith, and this is Iambic Poetry Podcast. I got a guest for you. Today, we're talking with the none other, the Tourette's and Regrets powerful champion, the woman herself who brings out the noise as much as she gives noise, ballerina stylist. I'd like to give you Jane the Message. Woo!
Hey.
What's up, Jane? How you
doing? Man, I am hanging in there. As best I can.
Most definitely. Oh, but no, I wanted you here because not only because we met over at Alchemy two years ago and stuff, and you took over. You actually won the you won that show that day. So, yeah. But no, I've been keeping an eye on you, how you've been doing stuff. And it was actually a good time to actually talk to you. So, because I'm doing right now I'm doing this theme where I'm talking to a lot of female rappers and stuff. And I wanted to pick you as one of my people to check out.
Thank you. Right. That's an honor.
No doubt. All right. But let's get all the charades out the way. I'm going to ask Jane, tell me about yourself. What's you about?
So I am born and raised in San Francisco. I am a battle rapper, but it like improv style battle rap, very comedy based. And I am freestyler and a recording artist, and I'm just like rolling out slowly my first, like my debut album, which is really exciting. And I have a background in classical ballet, as you do. and a lot of my music is really pushing towards like mental health art. Like, how do I put this? It's mental health advocacy, but it's also like about representation and trying to build like a story for people that have been left out of certain narratives in our society. And the other thing that sort of dovetailed into is back in December, I got diagnosed with autism, which was like really, really good to finally know, because I always knew something was going on. So a lot of my work as a musician moving forward, I want to also be pushing to present narratives and perspectives from just being neurodiverse. And yeah, I'm just like a artsy fartsy weirdo. And yeah, so I think that's most of it.
But being which that you basically are, so explain me what, I know, but explain to the public what freestyle rapping or rap battling
was
about.
Yeah, so I'm started with Tourette's Without Regrets. That was like how I got to finally pursue hip hop. So at Tourette's Without Regrets, it's a monthly variety show, and they've had this ongoing battle rap tournament that's just every month. And it's very short back and forth battles in like the format that most people know. It's written and researched in very long format and done a cappella. This is on beat and like 30-second rounds, and you've probably never seen this dude before, and then you just have to like take the piss out of him. And I've won several times, and it's great. I love it. Really fun, very lighthearted. It's not like the heavier battle rap where you're getting into the written format. It starts to get into being more of a teardown. This is kind of the stuff where it's like you want them to like go home, look in the mirror, be like, yeah, I can see it.
That's pretty cool. So how long have you been battle rapping?
About 4 years, I think. Like 3 or 4. Maybe 4 now, yeah.
Okay. And I see you still enjoy it. So it's like tearing down the competition.
Yeah.
But what also got you into going to also slam poetry? What got you into doing that too?
So I have been writing either poems or like verses since I was very young. I was like one of my first outlets to cope with life. And in terms of like getting to finally do poetry that I perform, that came out of also getting to battle rap finally and just like building up my self-esteem. So I have been writing just as my own like internal method and mechanism to survive. And yeah, like I just started to get more curious, and I started meeting people who do, you know, things in terms of like as being rappers in different capacities who also do slam poetry.
Oh, okay. So you started freestyling at eight years old?
Yeah.
What got you into freestyling at 8 years old?
So this is a weird story, but let's do it. So I was a very weird kid because I've always been autistic. And my dad gave me a very old Walkman, like the cassette type, with all these like cassette tapes that were like about self-esteem. So I'm like this like 7-8 year old walking around listening to things about like self-esteem because I was getting bullied, and that was my dad's solution. And then one day I like clicked over to KMEL. Like, I was like, oh, it's got a radio on it. And I was like, the first time I really listened to music really on my own, I was like, oh shit, hip hop is the greatest thing that's ever existed.
Nice.
And I just became like obsessed with it. Like I was like this little weird kid entering like school talent shows with like the stuff that I wrote. You know, I would just practice freestyling, talk myself through things. Like it was just, and then I don't know, like it was something I did just by myself, and I would whip it out at like karaoke until I got basically discovered by Jamie DeWolf, who runs the Tourette's Without Regrets, and got to do it, you know, on a stage. But it's just something I just did.
So, like you said, Jamie basically saw you at one of the karaoke's and said, "Hey, you want to try this thing out and try to see if you'll enjoy it or not?"
Kind of. It's like it's a little more weird destiny than that. Even like I was in a live dating game.
Okay.
And there was like a band, and it was, you know, like a joke, right? Like it was right. At this place I was working, they hazed me and made me do it as like contestant number 3.
Okay.
And yeah, so Jamie DeWolf was the host of that, and like contestant number 1 had to sing with the band, contestant number 2 had to do like I think a spoken word piece.
Right.
It got to me and I was like, "Can I make a request?" They're like, "No." They're like, "Rap." I was like, "Dope. That's what I was going to ask." And so I did, and everyone was like, "What?" So and Jamie DeWolf, that's when I got invited to start battling. I was like, cool.
Okay.
So, yeah, right? I was like, life is funny.
Most definitely. So at 12, you started being trained to do ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And you still are doing ballet. I see some videos and stuff. You still are, you right now getting back into the swing of it and stuff. So tell me about the injury you got in 2014.
Yeah. So ballet is challenging for any person's body, but I had a pretty bad knee injury. Like I'm missing cartilage now underneath my patella.
Oh.
And ballet is tricky too, because like I started very late, but I looked pretty young, so I got to train with professional schools, and like I've danced professionally, which is amazing. But you know, like if you have any injuries, you kind of tend to hide it. And I was in a conservatory program, so I didn't even want to tell anybody, because it's like I was the exception to the rule. And I eventually like kind of danced myself into a point where I couldn't. I had rehab on my knee and kind of was able to push into it. And then I found out I had an extra bone in my ankle. So like that injury like dragged forward into something else. So I had to have ankle surgery. So like I've definitely like, you know, you have to be really lucky to get through something as rigorous as ballet without any injuries. But also, you know, your body can kind of have some secrets, like some ticking time bombs waiting to explode. So yeah, that was really hard. And like I plunged so deep into it, my identity was kind of shaken by that. So I'm grateful that like I have had treatment on my knee and I've had successful surgery on my ankle. So now it's a matter of like integrating my dance into what I am now as a creative.
Right.
And like, honestly, like hip hop and the hip hop community in San Francisco has been so accepting of me, and more so than ballet, as much as I love it. It always felt like, you know, like the crush that doesn't really like you back that much.
Oh,
so, you know, I was always like chasing after it, knowing that I wouldn't ever be like a superstar ballerina because I started too late. And I've gotten so much from it, but there's just a lot of restrictions into like what you can be.
Okay.
And I'm more interested, I think, in using what I have as a dancer and moving that into a more complete package of the other things I'm good at. Like it's not just, you know, there's other parts of me that I want to express, but it's such a huge part of how I hear music. Like my musicality is very much built around it, and it's influences how I want my sound to be. So it's a huge part of me.
Oh, okay. But I do know of I had a few friends and stuff like Paul Willis here in Sacramento and stuff that have composed with ballerina schools teams and stuff, and actually have made actual compositions with hip hop and ballet together and stuff. I'm assuming they also do that in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah.
But you ever thought about doing something like that, or just?
Yeah, okay. Definitely. Yeah, I think, like, you know, I have ideas even for like music videos that I'd really like to incorporate my training into. And also, like, I, you know, it's a physical language. It's a lot like poetry.
Right.
You know, it's like we have body language and gestures, and then dance exaggerates those or makes them very metaphorical, just the same way that poetry does with our, you know, verbal language.
That's true. Most definitely. So the album I have, the last album I saw that you, the mixtape that you did was Better Than Nothing. Mixtape. What is the latest album you're working on right now?
Yes. Okay. So it's done, but we're releasing it kind of slow. So we're just like, I just dropped the first single like 2 weeks ago, and another one's coming up in a week. It's called High Functioning, which is referencing being autistic. And it's not a label that a lot of people would use anymore, but it's kind of indicating like a milder form, or like those of us that can kind of go under the radar for a long time because we don't have verbal deficits, you know, like things like that. So that's the album. Hurt, the first single, came out with a music video. So that's really exciting. And then just like, we're kind of doing it like a little different rather than just dropping the whole album, since I'm an up and coming artist, just trying to give multiple opportunities to engage with people and be like, hey, I'm still here. So it'll be like a slow process. And then I'm also building new music now. But yeah, like the whole thing was written prior to getting diagnosed with autism. But a lot of it is dealing with like just this very long, like almost battle to figure out what's going on with me and try to find words for it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I can believe that. So I saw the video of Hurt, and it is mind gripping because you don't see the gun until like mid second verse.
I never meant to hurt you, but I had to when you tried to hurt me.
And then when the gun gets turned to you, that even makes it more like, what are you pointing this at? And I was like, wow, it went from the point to the gun to the camera to the point of the gun to yourself as the problem. So I was like, huh, that was an interesting take on an idea of what you were talking about, because you did seem like you're talking to somebody,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah.
You find out you're talking to yourself.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, so like you said, you're trying to promote showing the dark, not only the dark side, but the other side of mental health. How has that been working so far? How has that been portrayed so far? That people have been looking at has been thanking you, or that people have been, how's it been working?
Yes, I've had a lot of people reach out to me who like deal with mental health. And chronically will have to, and also people that deal with being on the spectrum. And one of the things that's challenging is there is still a lot of stigma, and you need to have people who are willing to say, this is what it looks like, or even like, this is what the thoughts are like. It's not to say like all the negative or the dark side of what it's like is accurate. Like, they're distorted thoughts a lot of times, but you're the only one dealing with them. So it's like, you can't even, it's hard to get feedback on them. It's hard to feel like it's okay that that's part of your reality. And so I get a lot of people who are reaching out who are able to open up to me and know it's safe because I'm doing that, because that's part of what I believe is a mission in my life. Like, I know that that's not comfortable or even an option for a lot of people, for a lot of reasons, for social reasons, where, you know, that wouldn't be something they can access. But I want that to be the future that we're moving towards, where people can openly talk about these things and, you know, like have acceptance. And even if it's difficult for somebody who doesn't struggle with it to understand, but there to be an attitude of like, you are valuable, and me taking the time to understand you is not only productive, but it kind of helps everybody.
So let's backtrack to your mixtape, Better Than Nothing. Your title song on that was Sick. And listen to that. So this is the thing that always troubles me when I ask people who have mental disabilities or, well, mental efficiencies, is always the thought of what people, because people always take the idea, just like they do with racism or anything else. Some people get it, and then the ones that don't get it are the ones that make the most loudest noise, and you wonder, why aren't they the one not getting it? They're the ones that get it. They just go along that, yeah, that's just them. But the ones that don't, they're the ones that generate the fear, or they generate the prejudice or the hatred or the concern of just not wanting to deal with you. Why in the fact should people get that, should hear both sides and be explained to both ends? Why should they do that? Why?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the people that attack have learned to be bullies as a coping mechanism for life. So they're not really great at critical thinking, which sucks. Like, I feel sad that was something that was not, given to them as a tool. But the tool they were given, it's almost like a light switch. Like, where's the on, where's the off? And to feel secure in them being in the on good position, they just point at people and go, that one's the off position. And I'm not like that, so I'm good. And it's sad and dualistic. And I think they're kind of like making the point for me in a lot of ways, because if we're able to say, you know, not only is this my experience, but that's what the bullies are going to do. And they just go ahead and do exactly that. And bullying is being nice, because it goes all the way into catastrophic horrors. Like, this is, I feel very passionate about like addressing this in many directions as possible. And it intersects with sexism, racism, all forms of bigotry are going into this same thing. So like being able to talk about it from my perspective is just one voice, like circumnavigating that behavior that's so toxic and saying like, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. And we're out here really living, you know, they're welcome to come out and, you know, apologize for the rest of their lives and hang out on the cool side. But if they're not, you know, like there's so much that is being, how do I put this? Like, we don't have the time to waste on it in a certain way. So I also get why the people that want to accept, just kind of want to move forward and accept. It's tricky because then the people who are more likely to be targeted get a lot of abuse. And, you know, it's hard to know what to do with it. I think we're all still learning. And I'm you know, it's scary because let's say I do get to be more successful and visible, I'm going to deal with more and more of that. And it's just the reality of it. But like, you know, in order for that to start to change, it just can't be like running away from the bullies lets them win.
That's true. The bullies are out there, but you got a strong heart and strong mind. I applaud to you. So I'm going to change some speeds here. So when normally in the poetry scene, we have literary poets, people that write in the books, write the poet, sell their book, publish them and everything. And then we also got stage poets or performers, the rappers, the people that make the CDs sometimes, majority of the time, and they're the ones popping out the music and stuff. So we always have a versus of page poets versus the stage poets. So I'm going to ask you, Jane, what do you feel comfortable at? The page, the stage, or both?
So, all right, that's an awesome question. I think when it comes to stage performance, there's a lot that I can accomplish by getting on stage and sharing things that I struggled with or that I had to put in a lot of effort to articulate. It feels like I'm advancing a conversation, but to do that work, I really have to spend, in my opinion, a lot of time, you know, doing things that aren't for performance. You know, that for me is like, if I've written something so obvious, like, or so clear, you know, that like this is worth saying, but it takes a lot of like things that are more abstract that like are just about stuff in my head that really doesn't help anybody yet. It just helps me. So like I feel like both parts are so critical. I like doing the stage stuff personally because I've struggled to find my voice or to even find the confidence and the sense of validity to be on a stage. And I think there's something very raw about that. That's still part of me. And to go up and do it anyway is also modeling something that I think is important. Like the people that don't feel as comfortable on stage, being on stage is like part of it.
Most definitely. So here's one thing that always caught me my attention is that, excuse me if it sounds weird, you have a style, somewhat of a punk rock style, a very electrical style that when you come on stage, you can go, oh, snap, that's Jane. So it always cracked me up because I'm always assuming, you know, you see the girl, you know, the whole ideal of what rappers see in women and stuff. They see the ones that probably have the halter tops, the, you know, basically their hair off, that got long ass nails, basically the big old someone they'll see on a video and stuff. You kind of change the narrative on that when you come over. So, and then and it's even more interesting because you're the one they got to face off. So there, I always seen that. How's that been going so far?
Yeah, that's really fun for me. I've always been kind of, in some ways, relentlessly myself, like very shy, but just like not conformist, because like I never felt included in kind of the dominant narratives or cultures or styles. So I was like, I'll just make up my own. So it's, you know, it's my self-expression is something I'm really comfortable in because I feel like that I've spent a long time on it. Yeah. So like, when I get on a stage and people are trying to figure out how all these parts go together, they have a really hard time. Like they say some dumb things. And like, what's funny is like, sometimes guys will just try to do like canned, like attacks that they would do for a girl. I'm like, do you even see me right now? Or, you know, or like try to say I look like they're like, one dude said I look like his little brother. I'm like, cool, your little brother must be very pretty. you know. But, yeah, they just don't know what to do with it. You know, like they're not prepared.
I can see that being wow, little brother thing, because it is more of like a skate, like a almost like a skater style. Most guys look at it going, okay, we're gonna do this.
Yeah, exactly.
But also in the fact that I've noticed that there is not only there's a lot of women, but just like the male count, just like the white male counterpart, there's a lot of Caucasian women coming in to the game as savage as the white males or the black males. So it's kind of interesting. How do you tell from that? I mean, I know people may call you the female Eminem or stuff, but what do you entail from all that?
Yeah, you know, it's so first off, so I want to give a couple shout outs to some organizations that I've had the chance to work with. So mainly like Hip Hop for Change is a teaching, nonprofit that goes into schools and teaches like MCing and breakdancing and graffiti art and DJing and mixing. And like I've gotten to teach as an MC with that. And like we'll go to schools with various backgrounds and like socioeconomic classes, racial backgrounds, just a broad spectrum of the Bay Area. I think that the power of hip hop is also knowing the culture and respecting it. So I do think that, you know, using it as a vehicle artistically or even like expressing, you know, a different vantage point or different position in our society currently is really awesome. But also it's really important for people to know why this art form exists in the first place. And I think it still attracts a lot of people that are marginalized in some way. And for me, honestly, I think a lot of what connected to me was like, because I was on the spectrum, I really felt like an outsider. And this art form obviously was speaking from voices of people that were pushed to the margins. And it was so empowering. It's like, this sounds like music that came from the planet I wish I was on. And like, it's so I think it's meaningful for a lot of people. And like Eminem is somebody I would say like his socioeconomic background also probably plays a role in like how it connected to him as an art form. And I hope that a lot of people are entering into it, especially if they're pursuing something like trying to get on some record label, you know, like if they're trying to be commercial. I hope that there's going to be a lot of people coming through from different backgrounds that also respect the shit out of it. Like, because sometimes I'm like, ah, Iggy Azalea, just the stuff.
But speaking of which, you said, as you're pointing out, about being commercial and stuff. So what are you doing independently, the group you're working with, or are they basically what record label?
Yeah, so I'm independent at the moment. I'm excited because the album that I just released, I worked with a producer who has a lot of experience, so he's helping me kind of like softly get into things. And I'm hoping, like, I would love to get signed to something like, especially because like I can't organize anything. Well, not, I mean, kind of like I'm an artist. Right. So yeah, it'd be great to have like some people behind me, but you got to kind of build up your hype. It's a tricky time. Cause it's all about kind of going viral, and you can be a lot more, I don't want to like poop on people who are doing really well, but you can be a lot of like fluff. Like you attract eyeballs, but you may not necessarily be the most profound artist. And that can frustrate a lot of, people in the music industry who are independent. So I'm currently independent, but I'm not opposed to not being.
Nice. But you know, being that you are in the Bay Area, mostly San Francisco, and Oakland's right across the way, and people like Keyshawn and some other rappers out there that have a different, you know, well, they have their shine. Do you see them actually helping you out along with your friends or your achievement, or do you see them as your opposition?
Oh no, yeah. I look up to all the people with the courage to be artists at all. It's really inspiring, and I'm proud to be from the Bay Area. It's such a unique place to be, even in terms of like the ideas that people get exposed to. So I love hearing from like everybody that grew up around here, like what their perspective is and how they, yeah, what their shine is, like what is their way of seeing the world. And you know, it's honestly like really motivating that like people's ears are willing to go over to the Bay Area and hear what's coming out of it. Cause I love, you know, the Bay Area hip hop community is full of amazing people. So I hope we all get more attention.
And seeing, I also found out you also learned how to use Logic. So you also produce music.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how long you been doing that?
3 years, 2 years. Like 3-ish. Yeah. So when I started making like my own tracks, I realized immediately I didn't really want to use other people's tracks very often, like because there was a sound that nobody was making. So all my mixtapes are mine. Even the album that's coming out now, it's all my beats, and then the producer I'm working with just like took them up like several layers up, like levels up, because so he, you know, added different instruments onto it, tweaked the arrangement to make it even more like catchy and accessible. But yeah, like I have a sound I'm going for. So like learning Logic and making my own beats is really important to me. And just, yeah, so I think that's always gonna be part of my work.
Since I noticed that most people use like Ableton, or now they're using Serato Studios and stuff. You using Logic and Pro Tools has always been those two that have been the trendset or the staples or stuff.
I know a little bit of Pro Tools too. Like I'll mess with it for some of my vocal processing, but Logic was, you know, it's comfortable for me. And my producer works with Pro Tools. So it's something that, you know, I have a workflow, and I think everyone, if you are getting to producing your own stuff, it's important to figure out what your workflow is and what you're comfortable with, because there's like infinite ways to do this. There's not like set rules. So yeah, doing what you can feel is easiest for you so you can keep making your music is important.
Yeah. So there's always been, since I'm also a rapper and a producer also, is it's always the music that you make can go two ways. Either you're going to make it and you are going to rap on it, or it's going to be the music that you make and you're not rapping on, but you don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how is your thing when you say you're, do you, when you make, do you already have an idea of what you want to make and rap to, or is it more you listen to the beat and then try to flow from there?
Yeah, it's a mix. I even before I started pursuing music like seriously, I was always coming up with hooks all the time. So I have like this disgustingly large file of just hooks and like I'll try to go through that. Yeah, right. I think also like I do tend to write to process my thoughts and feelings. So I'll have like a thing I want to talk about, and finding the right beat that goes with that mood is so important that like I might have to start from scratch, you know, like get the mood right with the beat and then try to see if any of my hooks fit and end up with a new one anyway. But occasionally, like, I think I'll start with the beat just to practice my skills. And those are the ones that I sometimes don't know what to do with. And I Daylight just made a song off of one of my beats, which is really exciting. So I'm also getting the point where I can start, you know, giving them to people, which is cool.
Nice. So we want to bring this one up. This is one I've been bringing up to all my guests and stuff. What is your top 5 rappers?
Wow. Okay. Lauryn Hill. I'm going to actually say Lupe Fiasco. Let's see. I want to call him Most Def. I'm just, this is like, that's what he was. let's see. Okay, wait. Aesop Rocky. And let's see. I need one more. That's really hard. Everyone thinks I'm going to say Eminem. That's what's so funny. I did not listen to Eminem that much as a kid. Real.
Is it more because of the fact that even though he talks in somewhat of a manic disposition, because I hear a lot of people say that they kind of got turned off from Eminem because of some of the stuff he puts out. Not only the suicidal tendency talks and homicidal talks, he also brings a kind of a manic that people don't want to deal with at this moment.
He's hard to relate to for me. But he's very skilled. The thing I relate to him about, which I more understand by looking at his lyrics and how he sounds, is like he's very obsessed with words, and I can relate to that. But then his point of view is just really alien to me. So I never could latch onto it like, oh yeah, that resonates. Yeah, it never really struck me as something that I could just relax with, or like, you know, like it's connecting to it. Like the people that I like the most, there's some way that I can kind of connect. Like they're maybe a little like more conscious or nerdy, or, you know, and he's not either of those, though he's nerdy about words. I think that's kind of where that's at.
Okay, and your last one?
I'm gonna throw out Big Sean.
Okay.
Yeah, he gets underrated a lot. I think he has a great work ethic, and I appreciate his lyricism a lot. Like he's got some really tricky little things that he throws in there. So I'm sure that like my fifth spot could rotate every day of the week, though.
No, I always get people that go beyond 5. They always like throw like 5 more out. Oh, nowhere. They just throw. I'm like, okay, yeah. Nah, I said 5.
Yeah, I'm gonna be thinking about this for the rest of the day and be like, I should have said that.
But they talk to me. But can you give people a shout out of your social media where they can find you, and also your website?
Yes. So my social media is kind of mixed a little bit. A lot of it's under Jane the Message. If you want to look up my Facebook and follow me on there, that would be great. My website, Jane the Message. My Instagram, I'm keeping my old handle. It's Ninja Janie, NINJAJANIE. And I have a lot of updates that are going to be coming up about music dropping. My new tracks are going to be on any streaming platform. It's on TikTok. Make a TikTok. it'll be kind of easier to find that stuff too. But Jane the Message, kind of everywhere except Instagram.
Okay. And it's JaneTheMessage.com? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So when's the album supposed to come out?
Yeah.
Until this whole thing's down, or
it's just slow. Like, so every 3 weeks I'm dropping a song. Basically, there's like
seven. Okay.
Yeah. So there's 7 tracks on it. So every 3 weeks, and like I might do it that slow the whole time. But yeah. So just every 3. I think the next one's dropping on May 5th.
Oh. Okay. There you go, people. You keep an eye out. Jane the Message is coming out with another song on May 5th. If not May 5th, it's going to be in May. So just to let you know. But yeah, keep an eye on the album and everything. Hey, thanks, Jane, for coming out and rocking with us, okay?
Thank you.
No problem. All right, everyone. I'll put all the information on Jane the Message down below. And also for everything else, y'all take care. Peace.
Bye.
For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.